of your world and blessings upon you and your community. And I'm sure many will have a chance and to find Laura in a coffee hour because she's headed away soon. So if you want to wish her well, you'll need to scoot after the service. We are now in the fifth Sunday of Lent. And we're drawing near to Easter. And we're beginning our final phases of preparation. And the gospel passage that Sandy just read for us is full of the building tension. The shadow of Good Friday's cross is beginning to loom large over Jesus and over his disciples. And no doubt, this last journey to Jerusalem will be a strange and confusing time for his friends and his followers. Jesus has been making cryptic comments, talking about death and burial, even as his popularity with the crowds, his new status among the priests as a wanted man, builds tension in their little band of followers. Before the crowds gather, before the soldiers come in the night, before the betrayer collects his 30 pieces of silver, before the sweat drops of blood in the garden, Jesus makes a stop in a place of hospitality and kindness and warmth and deep love. Today we find Jesus with his disciples at Bethany in the home of his dear friends. The home belongs to Mary and Martha, sisters, and their brother, the freshly back from the dead Lazarus, whose recent resurrection by Jesus just so happens to have drawn the proverbial last straw in the eyes of local authorities. His growing influence runs the risk of bringing down the wrath of the Roman overlords. He hasn't been captured yet, nor has he stood trial, but his death sentence, for all intents and purposes, has been written. But now, this is a comfortable place where the one who will serve the whole world is served and cared for and doted on by friends, dear friends. No doubt, amidst the celebration and the excitement is quiet anxiety, the unspoken nervousness that accompanies a group that is harboring a wanted man. I can well imagine the meal that Martha has prepared. This is not a cold cuts and tray buns affair. This, after all, is a celebration of a dear friend and the reunion with a brother who is dead but now lives. Not to be underestimated, ever, is a person with the love of food, a talent for culinary arts, and a home full of much-loved guests. It's a safe bet that Martha was such a person. The house would have been filled with the smells of good food. I'm picturing a dinner menu with fresh-baked breads, appetizers, savory side dishes and trimmings and sauces, and I'm also guessing some sort of carefully chosen cut of meat roasted to perfection. And then, as if by magic, when you can't handle another bite, chocolate mousse? You know the meal. More than an exercise in cookery or technique, more than an ingestion of proteins and starches and sugars, a work of love. For more on the topic, and incidentally, Jeremy's two movie picks of the week, Ang Lee's Eat, Drink, Man, Woman, I highly recommend, and the Oscar-winning Danish film Babette's Feast. Both stories quite ably and beautifully demonstrate the link between prepared food and the display of love, even with people who don't know how to say it. All this to suggest that the common tendency, I guess it's the Sunday school tendency, to downgrade Martha as some sort of second-rate fusspot toiling in the kitchen might just be an unfair caricature. Let's cut Martha a break. But I'll stop talking with the salacious food talk. This is, after all, the Lenten season of fasting and simplicity, poverty and frugality, a season which reminds us of our suffering and mortality and the dust and ash from which we come and to which we are all headed. The 40 days of contemplation which remind us of Jesus' final journey to Jerusalem and prepare us for what awaits him there. The thing is, this is anything but a story of poverty and frugality and simplicity. Quite the opposite, really. Because Martha's lovingly prepared meal sets the stage for what the Swiss theologian Karl Barth calls an utterly prodigal, a wholly generous, and selfless at the same time, an absolutely humble action. Mary, of course, not exactly mixing it up in the kitchen, manages to one-up her sister in a spectacular, outrageous display of extravagance. Mary took a pound of costly perfume made of pure nard, anointed Jesus' feet, and wiped them with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. Nard, for a start, was a rare product made by crushing and extracting the essential oils from the ginger-like rhizomes of the spikenard plant. If you look at your bulletin, you'll find a nice botanical picture of that plant. Grown in the Himalayas, nard was widely regarded as a luxury perfume and a medicinal oil. Its unique properties, fragrant aroma, and the geographical links in its travels made nard an especially costly indulgence. Nard was for the elite, the wealthy, the pampered, and a pound, no less, an enormous quantity. Even beyond the financial cost, beyond the huge splurge, Mary gets on her knees and proceeds to wipe Jesus' feet with her hair, essentially taking the cherished and esteemed and very private personal space, especially in a culture that discouraged a woman from ever letting her hair down in the presence of a man, no less an esteemed rabbi. The personal space of her head and hair used as a towel to wash the road-weary feet of Jesus. Slaves washed feet, not the lady of the house, not the hostess. And with a pound of high-end perfume, with her hair, there may not be a suitable parallel in our culture to adequately convey the level of discomfort and shock the others in the room would have been experiencing. Or maybe I should rephrase that. There may not be a suitable parallel in our culture that I'd risk describing from behind the pulpit on a Sunday morning. Most of us know what luxury is well enough, though. Every culture and place has items and products of extreme value, opulence even. Maybe it's fine champagne. Maybe it's a rare bottle of 40-year-old scotch, a rare work of art, designer clothes, an exotic car, jewelry. We understand luxury. And we've all been in those social situations where someone so audaciously tampers with the status quo and the unspoken rules of social conduct that we can only wiggle and squirm with discomfort. Take a moment right now and recall one of those times. Does the memory even make you squirm now? Are we getting there? Are we getting close? Usually, such a moment begs for someone to break the tension. Might even be me. Usually a well-timed joke or a one-liner helps. But Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples, the one who was about to betray him, said, "Why was this perfume not sold for 300 denarii and the money given to the poor?" In this case, it is not a joke. But the chief felon, the villain of the gospel narratives chiming in, Judas, the betrayer, who it just so happens is enough a connoisseur of luxury goods to recognize a pound of nard and its value on the open market. The whopping sum of 300 denarii, which, as it turns out, is what a Roman legionary or a day laborer would have earned in a year. By comparison, the sum of 30 pieces of silver, enough to purchase a whole tract of land, a potter's field, which Judas received for his betrayal of Jesus, was roughly worth 120 denarii. Judas, costly isn't even the word for it. Beyond extravagant, wasteful even. Bart calls it utterly prodigal, which reminds us of last week's sermon about the prodigal son. And incidentally, we think that was a bad thing, right? Again, I think most of us know that same brand of disgust when we hear of some billionaire who buys himself a solid gold toilet for his fifth yacht. Most of us know what it looks like to waste perfectly good money. By most accounts, Mary's utterly prodigal action sure seems like a waste. But, though he may know a thing or two about the value of perfume and its potential as a source of revenue even, Judas is still missing the point. The gospel writer is quick to assure us of Judas's motives. John especially is none too kind with Judas. He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. He kept the common purse and used to steal what was put into it. Okay, he's not to be trusted with money and he doesn't care about the poor. True enough, we get that point. Judas had his price. And as the story plays out, we're even told that he can put a price on Jesus. But he's missing more still. He has failed to esteem the work of love he's just witnessed. While he knew how to price a pound of nard, he promptly devalued Mary's amazing act of generosity. Where this story is concerned, let's not forget, among the Gospels, John tells this story like no other. Judas's greed serves to highlight Mary, the model of a perfect disciple, and her profound act of generosity. Foot washing, even, well before Jesus models this for his disciples at the Last Supper. If Judas is the model of the worst sort of disciple, the betrayer, Mary is the model of the best. And as he holds the purse and schemes for himself, she gives her all, and then some. Moreover, Judas demonstrates that he has so thoroughly missed the point, in contrast to Mary, who exhibits insights that she might not even fully understand. So what is the point? Why such an extravagant, so totally over-the-top display? Shouldn't Jesus chime in with something about giving to the poor? If we've been paying attention so far as we've read this book, Jesus does seem to have a soft spot for the poor. And that would even be an understatement. But Jesus said, "Leave her alone. She bought it so that she might keep it for the day of my burial. You always have the poor with you, but you do not always have me." Jesus sternly rebukes Judas, defending Mary. But then he's talking all cryptic again about death and the day of his burial. Yes, Jesus, familiar with the poor, certainly one who calls us to their care. But Jesus, the Christ, is also well acquainted with extravagance, extravagant, prophetic gestures of bounty and generosity and plenty. Like, say, his first miracle, turning barrels of water into wine so tasty the head waiter is impressed at the end of the night. Or a picnic for 5,000 people with 12 great piles of leftovers. Extravagant, yes. Extravagant expressions of God's intervention and actions in saving this world. Mary's dramatic, bittersweet gesture, as much as it is an expression of deep love, a generous act, and a display of thanks for a dear friend who brought her brother back from the dead. It's also a fragrant offering. Mary does the work of a prophet who points to the spiced tomb, which will soon hold the body of her Lord. Our Lord, even, a prophet whose fragrant act is immediately described by Jesus as a symbolic preparation for the day he would be buried. She shares a glimpse of what lies ahead. The one who wept as he called her brother Lazarus out from the tomb and gave him life is being prepared for the day of his own death and burial. You will always have the poor with you. As he's been saying all along, Jesus leaves that daily task in our hands. If we are his people, we will care for the poor. Even as we do so, we are caring for our Lord. But right now, here in the presence of friends with less than a week to go before his execution, Jesus tells them that this very costly and elaborate outpouring of generosity is entirely appropriate. Now, on paper, if you're counting the pennies, if this Jesus project is an elaborate fundraiser and it was a plan to eradicate poverty, then Judas is asking the right question. But if Jesus came to this mean and violent and beautiful little planet, not just to eradicate poverty, not just to call out from the tomb Lazarus, but to come to a whole world full of us who live in the stench of our own death, then Judas couldn't be further from the truth. Even as he sat at the table right next to our Lord. In time, these very same disciples will be apostles who will carry the gospel of Jesus Christ to the far reaches of the globe. They themselves, and many others like them, would discover ways to commit acts of prodigal generosity and devotion, presenting their very selves as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. The fragrance of the gospel of Christ would spread to the whole world. 2 weeks ago, at the Lord's table, while musing about a class that Anne and Tana and I were taking, I shared some thoughts about what it might mean if the church that identifies itself as Christ's body is broken and poured out for the world. What does it look like when we take part in the project that God calls this troubled world out from the tomb in? I didn't have any suggestions for you. I left it open-ended, and I really don't have any suggestions for you now. I'll leave that task to the whispering of the Spirit in your life. May you hear the whispering of the Spirit in your life and have courage to listen again and again and to act. What are we being called to? How might we be extravagant and generous? Where can we find prodigal acts of service and ministry and worship in the world? How might we be poured out and broken? As hard as this is to say, and as hesitant as I am to put words in your mouth, this is my hope and this is my prayer. When I hear myself say this, though, I'm all too aware that many of you hear those words and you're already quite sure that you are not up to the task, that you've been running on fumes for far too long, And there's enough to keep you busy just tending to the regular, ordinary, day-to-day hazards and hustle and bustle of life. The extravagant gestures are better left to the real saints. There's no superhero left in you. You're about due for some rescuing of your own. Which is why it is also my prayer, it is also my hope that in these last days of preparation for Easter, that you would encounter the healing work and the presence of our extravagant and prodigiously generous Lord. As he assures you that it is his voice, not yours, which calls each of us out from the tomb. That it is his journey to Jerusalem, a journey of suffering love, which makes way for us to be reconciled to God. And because of him, we are invited to participate in this ongoing generous mission. As we participate in the life of our Maker, who we are is always, always informed and shaped by the promise that ours is a God who gives himself to us with a persistent and a prodigal and extravagant generosity. Thanks be to God.